Chapter 13. As soon as she had the address of the house, she called up Hedruck. He listened thoughtfully to her account, then nodded. "Good work," he said. "We'll back you up. I'll send a warship over very high up, and if we don't hear from you in a reasonable time, we'll raid." He hesitated. "I hope you realize that the only way we can justify such action is if you leave no doubt in Clark's mind that your reasons are purely personal. Are you prepared to go that far?" He didn't need to ask the question. The haggard face that stared at him from the stat screen left no doubt of the extent of her fixation. This girl was emotionally wrought up. He felt a qualm of pity, and yet he realized he was not responsible for her feelings. He had merely recognized them and used his knowledge of psychology to intensify her pursuit. A caloditic of the measurement of Cale Clark would yet make himself felt in Isher. The chance that the impact would affect the war itself was not impossible. Once started on the right path, the pace of activity, the pattern of callidity, would be a direct moving cube, piling up so fast that no human brain would grasp the extent of what was happening until afterwards. If only there were some way of discovering what form it would take. Hedrock shook himself inwardly. He was not given to wishful thinking. They would simply have to watch Clark's movements and hope that they would recognize the moment when it arrived. He saw that the girl was waiting for him to speak again. His thoughts grew instantly sharp. He said, "What time is your appointment, tonight or tomorrow?"
"Tonight at 10:30.
She managed a grim smile.
"The receptionist insisted I be on time. Apparently they can hardly handle the business they get."
"Supposing he isn't among those available at that time, what will you say?"
"I gather that there is a complete illusion break at that time. The men and women are then allowed to select partners. However, if he shouldn't be available, I shall not be either. I shall be very finicky."
"Do you think Clark will recognize you?" He saw that she didn't understand what he meant. He explained. "The illusions leave after-image hallucinations, which interfere with visual perception."
Lucy said, "I'll make him recognize me."
She described several methods she would use. Hedrock considered them, then shook his head. "It's obvious," he said, "that you've never been in a house. These people are perpetually, endlessly suspicious. Until you are actually in a state of illusion, your chances of saying anything that is not overheard are dim. Once the automatic machines begin radiating stimuli, they don't worry about you anymore. Bear in mind and adjust yourself to any situation that may come up." Lucy was recovered from her shock. After the afternoon she and Cale had spent together, she had felt sure of him.
"He'll recognize me," she said firmly.
Hedrock said nothing to that. He had merely wanted to point out the problem. 3 days and nights of illusions was a long time. Even if there were no after-images, the brain was dulled, the body's capacity for life temporarily at low ebb, no energy for memory.
Lucy was speaking again. "I'd better get ready. Goodbye, Mr. Hedrock."
"All the luck in the world, Lucy," said Hedrock. "But don't call for help unless it's absolutely necessary." Hedrock did not leave the stat the moment the connection was broken. During this period of emergency, he lived in an apartment adjoining the coordination office. His work was his life. Virtually all his waking hours were spent at his desk. Now he called the weapon shop naval headquarters and ordered them to dispatch a protective warship. And still, he was not satisfied. Frowning, he considered the potentialities of Lucy's position and finally called for her secret file. In 2 minutes, by weapon shop interspatial transportation, the remote information center precipitated the plate onto the table in front of him. First, he checked the facts. Comprehension, 110. Horizon, 118. Plethora, 105. Dominance, 151. Ego, 120. Emotional index, 150. Hedrock paused there. Compared to the norm of 100, not forgetting the average of 85, Lucy was a fine, intelligent girl with a somewhat high category emotional capacity. It was that that had brought her into the affair. After Cale Clark was identified, by a routine checkup on the crowds that gathered before a new weapon shop, as a caloditic giant, it was decided to contact him through the medium of an unmarried woman with the high emotion index. Deliberately, the Weapon Makers Council anticipated that the caloditic would excite fixation in Lucy. There were other factors involved in her selection, mostly sanity safeguards for a young woman who was going to be subjected to unnatural stresses. For one thing, it was desirable from the point of view of the girl's happiness that the attraction be mutual for the time being. Permanency, of course, could not be guaranteed in a changing world. One by one, Hedrock examined the factors applicable to the present situation. At last he sighed. He felt sorry for Lucy. The weapon shops did not normally interfere with the private lives of their members or of anyone. Only the unparalleled emergency justified using an individual human being as a pawn. Thought of the emergency drew his mind. He returned the file to Information Center, then switched on the stat again. He manipulated it intently, rejected several images that resulted from the draw of energy in the room he was aiming at, and finally had what he wanted, the map of time. He had no difficulty locating the large shadow. It was lying 6 weeks and a day in the future. The tiny shadow was harder to find. He saw it then, a minute black point on the curving vastness of the map. It seemed to be approximately 1,000,000 years in the past. Hedrock closed his eyes and strove to visualize the span of time. He couldn't. The energy locked up in McAllister was too great now for planetary comparisons. The problem of exploding it was a logic nightmare. When at last he shut off the stat, he experienced a great weariness and an incredulous wonder that after all this time, he still didn't have even a tentative solution to the deadliest danger that had ever confronted the entire solar system. He spent the next hour studying precis of reports that had been filed by other agents throughout the day. Lucy didn't know that she was among the few dozen agents who obtained immediate and direct access to him at any time of the day or night. Those not so favored talked to machines or to any one of a dozen executives who alternated on a three-shift basis. Again and again, the condensed accounts required more thorough investigation. Not once did he begrudge the time. Not once did he let himself feel rushed. Each report was examined in the detail that he considered necessary. 10:30 came, and though he was aware that Lucy must now have arrived at the house, he paused only briefly and called the weapon shop warship, which was hovering high above the place. For a moment, he examined the house itself as it showed through a telescope, a toy-like structure in a suburban estate that seemed all garden. Then, the picture of it clear in his mind, he turned to his work.